at any time in 24 hours a day, we will be there to check that camp out to see if it's being ran like the word says, Camp Paradise.
Well, maybe you can get some camps that are not quite Camp Paradise, but, you know, my view has always been that people need a place to sleep at night, and they're safer in groups, even if, you know, they're not the cleanest in their habits, and, you know, people can live in houses and can be as dirty as they like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't get any kind of shit, but if you, you know, light up a joint and you're in a camp.
You live on the street and you're dirty, you get in a lot of, you know, you end up with a bad reputation from the public.
Right.
That's where we made our change. We understood why the public was mad. We've seen it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when we're here camping, we have people walking through throwing beer cans in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us mad. And I understand what the community was going through, and so did a lot of the other campers, so that's why we started Camp Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
This is our home. We're no different than any of the other neighbors.
Well, I know that
our yard looks nice and clean, just like our neighbors.
Another concern I know that's been going around, Larry, is not going around, but in the Parks and Rec Commission and the San Lorenzo Urban Restoration Environmentalist Group has been concerned about any campers along the river cause environmental degradation.
River task force or whatever they want to call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know how many of them live along this river up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got houses all along this river up here. They don't complain about people living in homes because their septic tanks are dripping into the river a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to bitch about a homeless encampment of people that's trying to do the right thing, that's trying to get into one of them wooden houses. But now we're telling them to take the wooden houses and shove it because we like the tents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing wrong with living in a tent because I got just as much in my home as they have in their home.
Now,
I have electric generator. I have TV. Mm-hmm. I have a VCR. Mm-hmm. I have a computer. You know, they have nothing, no difference than what I have.
Well, they have an elevated attitude.
Yeah, they got bad attitude.
Well,
the only other thing they have is they'll have a pile of wood when the earthquake comes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we will have rock and roll tents, and they'll have fallen down homes. You know, the big bad wolf comes and blows.
Well, let me ask you this. I did ask Patricia Maticek, one of the Parks and Rec people, or certainly one of the SLURP people, I'm not quite sure which of these commissions she's on, to come down to the camp and take a look at the generator, and, you know, you had graciously agreed to check it out. And so forth, because she was concerned that might be an environmental hazard.
Yeah, she's trying to, you know, just like they're all doing. They're digging for something to bitch and moan and complain about.
Mm-hmm.
This is a brand new generator. The brand new generators. They don't leak oil. They don't leak gas.
Mm-hmm.
This thing is brand new. We have a big tank set underneath of it, just in case, you know, somebody wanted to have something to bitch and moan and complain about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, these people that's bitching and moaning about the homeless encampment, they're supposed to be the river task force, they're supposed to be this, they're supposed to be that. You know what? They're so full of shit they need to get their heads out of their own ass. They probably live right along this river. And you know what I'm telling the river task force? Clean up your own backyards before you start picking in mine, because we don't want to play no games.
Have they showed up, by the way, any of them, to talk to you? Or?
Well, I think we had one group that came through here a couple months ago that was River Task Force.
But nothing in the last couple weeks, huh?
Huh?
Nothing in the last couple weeks?
No, nothing.
I see. Well, that's too bad, because I'd hoped that she would do that, and also hoped she was claiming that there was some large cleanup of the river right before Camp Paradise did in the area you were in, and I wanted to see those documents so we could see if that really had happened. I know you said that there was a lot of trash there when you were cleaning up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, anything...
Well, if everybody wants to see what Camp Paradise is all about, today at 3 o'clock, we're cleaning Falkirk Street.
Mm-hmm. Now,
is it the neighborhood or this so-called river task force?
Something like that.
Help us clean up. You know, we're doing the job for free.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this.
The river task force is so concerned about their river. Come on, guys. I got garbage bags I'll put in your hand. Come and help us.
Hey, now we're talking.
About it.
Luckily, I'm not on the River Task Force. There is a meeting, I think, of one of these groups this week, and I'll try to get you the information so you can show up there if you want to.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd like to find out when their meeting is. Because, you know, I've done pretty good proving every one of these people wrong. That's against this camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to bitch about it. They want to say, oh, that river's polluting. Well, tell them to move off their house out of the river. You know, they got houses that sit closer to the river than my camp does.
Any new reports from Khalil, the environmentalist that you've hired?
I'm supposed to talk to him later on this afternoon.
Well, and now, is there a number you can be reached at if folks want to talk to you directly?
Yes. My phone number is 831-278-9904.
And is there anything more you'd like to say?
Call me 24 hours a day if they need to talk to me. I'm always open to new ideas.
But try the daylight hours after 10 o'clock is my advice.
Yeah, that works, but I will always answer the phone, even if there's a homeless person out there right now listening to this radio.
Excellent.
If he needs my help, all he has to do, him or her, it don't matter, call me, and I will be there to help you.
If you can, Larry, put Squirrel's number on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, for me, could you, because I've lost it.
Okay, I sure will.
Just do that at a later point. I don't want to take it on the air, so unless you have it, well, call it into me if you're willing.
Okay.
We've been talking to Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise. There is a 3 o'clock cleanup out there at the end of Felker Street if you want to bring a broom or just a pair of ready hands. Anything else you want to point out, Larry?
Just come on and enjoy and kind of meet Camp Paradise and see what we're all about. You know, homeless people's had a bad rap for years.
Well,
it's, like they say, this is the new generation, huh?
Hopefully. Thank you very much, Larry.
Okay, buddy.
Good to hear you.
All right.
And that was Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise, and we are reaching the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, except that we seem to be able to be going over a little time here because, there's nobody in the studio, so I will just pirate the next show until such time as someone shows up. Let's hear some more of Peter Marin of Santa Barbara, and if you got any calls yourself or comments or thoughts, you can give a call to 427-3772. But since the show is likely to end at any point when Skidmark Bob comes rolling in, do tune in from 6 to 8 on Thursday. That's when the Bathrop Spears Broadsides resumes. And if there may be a time change as well, possibly we may be doing an earlier Thursday show. I'm not sure what's happening with that. There's some possibility of that coming up. But in any case, thank you for being with me, and let's hear now some more of the Peter Marin interview, and call in if you'd like. We'll try to squeeze you in before the end of the show. Peter Marin is a Santa Barbara activist who has a lot to say and a good way of saying it. He's very articulate.
I understand, but that's why we think government has to be involved. I mean, actually, we find the curious thing here is we get a certain amount of sympathy from businesses, right? Actually, a little bit more than from the churches. And that's rather fascinating to me. And when we do get responses from the churches, the poverty and helping each other out, you know, they're not the big Unitarian Episcopal
upper middle class church.
No, that's right. There is a class question here, which is very obvious, but also subtle in its implication.
Well, it's certainly true. You know, Wiley Drake in Duena Park, California. You're probably familiar with him,
right?
You know, he was putting people up in his church, and still is. I guess he's putting up twice as many as he should.
Right.
And he had to take 3 years of probation and 5 misdemeanor convictions. And, you know, he recently had his dog strangled and his tires slashed for defending the homeless woman, I guess her name was Gru, in court.
I don't know how many other local churches in his area have sprung to his defense.
I don't think that he's mentioned any churches. And he, of course, is extremely conservative. He's...
Right.
He heads the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, boycott Disneyland and that sort of thing, because of the gay partners and so called lack of family values, that sort of thing. So he and I have many disputes, but I applaud his courage in standing beside homeless people in terms of basic civil rights issues. And
I learned long ago that there's two things here. One is there isn't any necessary correlation between human generosity and political ideology. And the other thing is that, unfortunately, a lot of liberals I know and people in town are so convinced that they're right in advance on every issue because they are liberal, that it's very hard to convince them that they're wrong about certain things. They're very convinced of their own virtue. And you know, we have three liberal supervisors out of five, and we probably have at least three liberal city council persons, maybe four, and yet these people have left on the books from time immemorial the laws that actually forbid the poor to sleep on the street if they have no place else to go. And you can't go before that city council or the liberals on it or the liberal supervisor and tell them these laws are unconscionable and should be removed immediately.
Yeah, I know. I've tried.
No, but these laws are kept on the books by liberal people.
Here in Santa Cruz as well, of course.
I know, and I think we have to be very clear about that because very often we tend to think that these laws are the results of the conservative or reactionary elements, and that they're the villains. But the villains in this case are the liberals who have the power in our town to remove them and do not.
Now, it's true that the current sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, the very draconian sleeping ban that is actually worse than the Santa Barbara sleeping ban, was put on the books by the Bert Muley City Council in 1978.
Right.
And the same liberals are always, you know, doing these drives for justice in Colombia, Nicaragua, and
exactly,
and you know, demonstrations at the IMF and things of that sort, which I'm of course in favor of, but
no, it's tremendously exasperating.
Yeah,
tremendously, it is easier for me to argue with conservative people than with liberal people. Because they assume we're on the same side, and we start telling them that you're not or that they're wrong, there's this sort of outrage that ensues as if you were a turncoat of some kind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've seen that happen repeatedly with people who were my allies, and then they suddenly thought, you know, oh, you...
The point is, what's odd is I have friends like this who, they're... Well, you remember in the old days, if you were anarchist or socialist or Marxist, you would criticize liberals and conservatives alike,
mm-hmm.
because you would understand that underneath everything they shared certain attitudes which were perhaps not the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, if you argue against a liberal position, nobody assumes you're a Marxist, they assume you're a reactionary.
Interesting.
And that is interesting to me. And all my, you know, there's been this demonization. So all my friends have spent the last 20 years voting for candidates they didn't like because they were so sure the Republicans were the devils who have to be defeated.
Yeah, I know. My family constantly attacks me for supporting Nader, claiming that we helped elect Bush. That's the argument, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and then if you look at Clinton's record about welfare or these things, you know.
Or the drug war.
In those regards, the socialist or the Marxist or the anarchist critique would be correct. There's no fundamental difference between these parties.
Now, let me just kind of quickly jump to this other issue, which I haven't talked to you about. What about the drug war in Santa Barbara? How does it affect poor people there? It's here in Santa Cruz, they're on the front lines, because when we have the sleeping and camping bans there, they have absolutely no privacy, and just the very act of sleeping at night makes them vulnerable to searches and such.
We don't have a lot of that, actually. You know, the people who have it the hardest are the alcoholics. We have a lot of, drunken public or open container laws. But these are very small, and they go to warrant, you get about 12 of them, and then you have to go spend 2 weeks in jail. So, and as a town, you know, they passed the medical marijuana, a version of the medical marijuana initiative here, even though it basically had no power, right?
Do you have medical marijuana clubs that people can actually join?
No, but the city council actually passed a resolution, you know, in approval of the medical marijuana laws, and if they had the power, they would have made these laws workable in Santa Barbara, but they can't because they're overridden by federal laws, obviously.
Well, you know, there is. Cities do have the power to, introduce states of emergency, as Oakland did when it, you know, supported its cannabis club and so forth. And
well, we didn't. I don't think when this was brought before the city council, I'm not actually sure we had a cannabis club that was bringing it. Right. We got a lot of support actually from Bruce Rittenhouse.
conservative.
Yeah, sort of conservative. I mean, this is an issue about which sometimes conservatives come out on the right side.
Well, National Review and William Buckley has been for decriminalization for years.
Exactly. So, I don't think, we've had lots of people ticketed, and we've even had certain police, which we tried to stop going into RVs without being invited in, right? But we haven't had searches, and we haven't had drug cases associated with this.
Interesting.
I think towns have their own nature, you know, and I mean, if you ask me seriously, I think we have heinous laws on the books, right? But I think I've told you this before. But let's say we have 2,000 homeless people in Santa Barbara, and let's say the shelter is closed 8 months of the year, so you got 8 months with 240 nights, and you have 2,000 people sleeping rough 240 nights. That's what, 48,000, something like that. And we've had a total in the last year of 300 tickets given. So if you match the tickets with the actual numbers of people sleeping in places, what you see is they keep them all on the books. It's basically a way of herding people or making them keep out of sight. And they don't actually try to enforce these laws to the point where life becomes unlivable for people on the street. I mean, it's unlivable because they're on the street, but there's a sort of, you know what the police do with hookers? You know, they sort of move them from corner to corner when too many of them collect in one place or when the citizens protest. So it's a little like that. I mean, the laws are a convenience because it allows the police to keep people from sleeping in certain places.
And that's been one of your concerns about this this RV sleeping law, that it would put homeless people in a situation where, for example, in court, they can no longer use, the necessity defense.
Yeah, but, I mean, let me tell you, we had a guy in a car, was living in a car, and, of course, through carelessness, I mean, he doesn't have much money, but he could have got the car registered, and he didn't. And he kept getting tickets because the car was on the streets without being registered. And he didn't take care of the tickets, and eventually the police towed the car away. So now it's costing us several hundred dollars to try to get the car back, but... The point is, I said, well, where are you sleeping? We were standing in front of the municipal court, which is right across from the county courthouse. And he said, I'm sleeping right next to this building. I mean, so that's the weirdness, you know?
Yeah, I've seen that. Actually, we had that happening here in Santa Cruz a decade ago when there were these long 8.5-month vigils in front of the post office, and people would actually sleep right near the courthouse and so forth. But it wasn't like there was any real security in any of that stuff.
Sleeping on the street, right, and knowing the police, but not besides all the danger you're exposed to, but knowing the police could ticket you is a terrible thing. The odd thing is, I'm trying to be fair to the town, you know, they don't enforce these laws as a way of driving homeless people away.
Hmm. I mean, and not generally. I think it's done specifically, at least in Santa Cruz, to get some people out of town.
I don't think it's done here. You remember Ricky Goldsmith? Did you ever meet him?
Not sure.
He worked at the first armory shelter that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a longtime homeless guy who developed colon cancer. And, of course, even when he did this, didn't stop drinking. And he had a little camp right out by the zoo, right, which was fairly exposed. The police knew he was there. And they knew he was sick, so they'd come by and check and see how he was doing. And occasionally they'd give him an open container ticket, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was pretty much in plain view. They knew he was there for months and months. They knew it was his camp. They would just come by and check on him to see how his health was. Right. I mean, that's the sort of anomalies that you get here. They could have got him out of the camp in a minute.
Right.
But that's not uncommon. We made a study at the homeless shelter. It was just a rough questionnaire. We're trying to perfect a really good one now. But we asked people how long they've been homeless and how many tickets they've gotten. And then we had a guy like James Magruder, who's a sort of old-time, in-your-face drinker, Hobo Jungle guy, right, who must have had a couple hundred tickets over the last 2 years, and we'd have people who'd been on the streets for 4 years and had anywhere between 0 and 6 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that tells you, you know. I mean, it tells you, I mean, obviously people have to sleep in certain places where they're not in other people's spaces, and these places may be unsafe, and they may get bothered by the police who wake them up and ask them to move, but in fact they're not enforcing this law in a way that makes living on the streets impossible. Nobody should have to live on the streets.
Well, I guess I don't think that they're doing that because they've decided to be nice to the folks on the street. I think it's because they realize that they have limited resources and that what they want to do is, you know, I think they'd prefer to have everybody out of town, but they just don't have the ability to do it. Maybe I'm
I don't think that question even comes up anymore. I think in this town and in most towns that now San Francisco is different, right? I mean, in most towns that I know of, even you know down in Florida, right? Homelessness is just understood as being a part of the city's life now, for better or worse. I mean, saying that is a horrific thing to say, but most cities now accept homelessness as an inevitability. But, I mean, you see in San Francisco what happens when they really decide to take assertive action. It gets pretty horrible.
Right, but I think that mechanism of gentrifying and moving everything out, and they're still trying to do it, I think, in San Francisco, is also happening in San Jose. And I think the same forces are kind of in place in different cities, even here in Santa Cruz, and I don't know about Santa Barbara, but I take a different perspective on it than you do. I think that there is still this mentality that, you know, if they can't do it because they don't have the resources, but New York City did it, for example.
In New York City they fought back and tied them up in the courts, if you know. I mean, but that's been recent.
Well, Giuliani is, you know, boasts he now has clean.
No, and I understand that people do that. I'm trying to make a distinction, though, between that kind of approach to homelessness and the one we seem to have in Santa Barbara.
I see. Yeah.
I mean, that's my point. I'm trying to distinguish between the aggressive attempt to really eliminate the homeless from the city's life, in a way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the implicit understanding, which I think maybe you have in Santa Cruz among most people, but I don't know, that the homeless are there to stay, and what to do with them is another question.
Hang on for a second. I got to turn the tape over, and we probably got to end this pretty quick. Hang on.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, listening to an interview with Peter Merritt, Santa Barbara. And this interview happened about a week and a half ago, and it will be reflected in an interview in an article in Street Spirit newspaper, which should be coming out later this week on the streets.
So what lies ahead, Peter, for Santa Barbara and I guess the Committee for Social Justice, which is a group that's been meeting regularly for the last 2 years?
I don't know what. I mean, we'll keep going to court. I don't know what we'll do after we win, if we win this little particular battle about RVs. I suppose we'll go after sleeping and camping, but I don't know how we'll do that.
What about the Pottinger guidelines of Miami? Have you considered expanding it to a broader fight? The Pottinger guidelines, for those who are listening, is the agreement that the police have made under the essentially the threat of a federal judge, Clyde Adkins, that they can't actually approach a homeless person with even a complaint about a fire or being in a park after dark or being naked or any one of what's called life-sustaining misdemeanors, camping, sleeping, unless they actually have a shelter bed available.
Here's the difficulty. This is a way of answering your question about what next. You know, in Santa Barbara, we have something called a rescue mission. The rescue mission allows 10 sleeping nights per month to any homeless person. And when we've been going into court lately, we've been putting up the necessity defense, which is basically, no, you can't enforce these tickets or hold someone responsible because, in fact, they had no place to go. But the response of the attorneys and the police and the judges is that if guys could have gone to the rescue mission, then they did have an alternative. In our town, most people won't use the rest commission, A, because they separate couples, B, because you have to be there at 6:30, and C, because you have to listen to religious instruction in the form of a sermon. So what we're doing now is in an appeal of one of the tickets that guys have gotten is trying to establish the principle in court that because this is a religious institution and because you're required to listen to a sermon, you can't hold the homeless responsible for not having gone there for shelter.
Now, wait a minute. This is a faith-based initiative.
Yes. Yeah. It's the Rest Commission, which, you know, run by people who believe in Jesus. And so when you go to supper or when you go to the shelter, you're supposed to listen to the sermon about Jesus. And they're very open about this.
Mm-hmm.
They actually have a pretty good recovery program, but it is faith-based.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean is most of the guys on the street have not used up their 10 nights a month at their rescue mission, and the rescue mission often has beds. So whenever we have guys getting tickets, the city attorney will come in and say, well, you guys can't plead necessity because he could have been at the rescue mission. And we always have to show that for some reason he couldn't go to the rescue mission. But what we're trying to do is get the rescue mission eliminated as a viable alternative. Once we do that, since that's basically the only shelter here 8 months of the year, we could go in the direction you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as the rescue mission is there as an alternative, that approach isn't going to work.
Well, it's slightly different, though. The police officer actually has to approach the homeless person and have that bed available as a resource to that person. So they would have to show that that bed is available to the person. They would have to know that. And having it available 10 days a month is not going to be enough, because when they approach unknown homeless person A, they have to know that that bed is available for them.
Right. I mean, but the point is, you have to talk to Glenn about that. I mean, A, these are particularly laborious, and B, you have to have an appeals court which is liable to rule on this in your favor. I think what people have seen in California, unfortunately, this has come up several times about different issues in Santa Barbara where we wanted to push these questions to the appeals court level. And
well, I think the reason it worked in Florida is because it went to a federal court, and again, that doesn't always work.
No, but it's a federal appeals court. But one of the problems is that the Berkeley people weren't having much success. The Southern California ACLU, I mean, one thing is you have to have certain resources to push these through the appeals process. And the Southern California division of the ACLU has been very slow and retrograde in dealing with homeless issues. The Northern California ACLU has been much better in pushing some of these questions.
Probably both are much better than the Santa Cruz ACLU.
Well, there are the local ones, there are local ACLU and then regional ACLU.
Right.
And the
right.
Northern regional one did push several cases through the Ninth Circuit, but they didn't get good results.
Yeah, they had a horrible judge, Jensen.
I know, but one of the fears is that this is what lawyers talk about all the time.
Bad precedent.
If you've been likely to lose, don't push it because you'll get bad law as
yeah.
a result.
No, I hear you.
So it's a risk to push these things, because what we found, for instance, when they, I think they pushed the sitting law somewhere in the north, it may have been even
Seattle roulette decision. Yeah.
But as soon as that decision came down, they passed a sitting law in Santa Barbara because they had the appeals court decision.
Right. Now I hear you there. And they passed it in Berkeley, where it was ultimately overturned by the city council, and
right.
by, although Santa Cruz local court overturned the sitting law, even in spite of the federal roulette decision.
You know, it is like playing roulette. It's a question of who you get and what your resources are. I mean, the irony is they don't enforce the sitting law. We haven't had a sitting ticket in 18 months in Santa Barbara, I think.
And we get enforcement more by threat than by case.
Yeah, they move people along with it here. We've seen that, and if you go downtown on State Street there, one of the things is since they opened up the shelter, the guys who would usually have been on State Street are now over by the shelter, because that's where the food is, and that's where you can hang out.
So, well, Peter, we've got to go, and you've given us lots of information, lots of stuff to chew on. You write frequently for, or at least regularly, for Street Spirit. and your poetry appears there. That's the homeless newspaper sold by homeless people on the streets. And is there any way people can get more information about the Committee for Social Justice?
Yes, if they want, they can. I'll give you an address and a phone number.
Okay.
Their phone number is 805-560-6062. Again, that's 805-560-6062. Or they can write to us, I guess, at the Committee for Social Justice, 1216 State Street, Suite 803, Santa Barbara, 93101.
Great.
Okay. Anyway, thanks, Robert.
Yeah, listen, send us an email, send an email to City Council supporting Camp Paradise. It looks like we're approaching another one of those crisis points.
I seem to be doing okay so far.
Well, they want us gone, they want Camp Paradise gone by the 31st or else is their latest, you know.
Even with your support, I mean, even with the sponsorship, you can...
Well, the sponsorship is, I think, at the moment, you know, hopeful, but unfortunately it lacks funding. It lacks any kind of agreements with the city council. They're just, you know, I think that's one of those things they'd rather see it disappear before they have to deal with it officially on the second Tuesday in September. But I'd like to be wrong.
Have you guys gone to Time or Newsweek about this?
No. If you have any connections there, let us know.
I have connections, but I found, you know, they when they weighed in about the old sleeping camping law in Santa Barbara, local people paid attention. They like this stuff, you know. They like this picturesque stuff.
We'll have to call them, and I don't think Time and Newsweek has ever done a story about the Santa Cruz sleeping ban.
No, and if you, you know, they love these sexy photos of people out in the wild, you know.
That could be, we'll just have to, you know, forward them some of those risque deals.
The other thing I suggest is if you write this stuff and Pacific News Service. Send a piece there, they're likely to run it, and the papers will pick it up. My experience has been, you know, when this gets in the media, people, horrible, isn't it? When you get this stuff in the media, local officials began to behave differently than they otherwise would.
Suddenly the lights are turned on, the rats have to scurry away.
About like that, yeah.
Listen, Peter Merritt, thank you very much for taking your time here, and we'll do it again.
Okay. Bye, Robert.
Bye-bye.
And this is the extended version of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It looks like Skidmark Bob is late for supper, or is it lunch? In any case, we're going to be putting on a loop tape shortly because I am going to be taking off, and I want to thank all of you for listening. We've been going for 3 hours now on Civil Rights on the Streets. That was Peter Marin from Santa Barbara, writer for Street Spirit and numerous other more mainstream publications. As you can hear, he's very well spoken. Looks like we have a phone call coming in here. Hi there.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. You're on free radio.
I'm coming in soon. How long are you going
to
be there?
No, I'm about to leave, and I'll leave a loop tape on, actually.
Why don't you just throw on a CD on repeat? Because I'm heading down there within minutes.
Sounds good, although I have to confess to the entire broadcasting public that I don't know how to do a CD on repeat.
It's easy. You just put... Actually, you don't even have to put it on repeat. Just put a CD in. I'm literally going to be there within a couple of minutes.
All right. Well, then we'll be waiting for you.
Okay.
Or the CD will.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that sounds like Old Lady Scar Arms, Cut Your Fucking Hair and Get a Job, coming in. But first this. Hi there. You're on free radio.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm encouraged that Old Lady Scar Arms will be coming in. Before she does and before you leave, I would like to say something on the air very quickly.
Sure.
I listened to the last interview, and I have to say, Robert, I feel bad saying this, and I hope you don't interrupt me, but I need to say it. When you introduced that interview, you went on and on and on about how people working on all these different issues from Columbia to whatever, to the IMF, how they're all not behind you, and then you... go on in the next interview, at the beginning of the interview, you start talking and extolling the virtues of a person like William F. Buckley and some other like right-wing people because they're like somewhat behind you on one issue that you agree with. And to be fucking honest, it just really, what it does when I hear that kind of talk from a person who claims to be like involved in justice issues and like all the things that you claim to be involved in, I have to wonder, like, where, first of all, where that comes from, and secondly, you know, basically, what it comes down to is it just kind of spoils your own message, and it takes away from your own work, and it does you yourself a great disservice. And I would take my comments off the air, or if you would like to go on to the air without me, that's fine. I have to go.
Sure.
Thank you for allowing me to talk
freely.
Thanks,
Vinny.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny, for the call. Actually, I think you may have misinterpreted some of my comments, and it would have been good to speak to you on the phone, so perhaps we can talk about it, and we frequently run into each other at the beginning of the show. I wasn't referring to individuals working for IMF and Colombia and other activists at all. I was talking, and so was the other person who was discussing this issue, Peter Marin, about city council members and politicians who claim to be liberals, but on homeless issues, they are not liberal at all, and they don't mind being liberal on Nicaragua far away, and this is like Mike Rotkin, who's a typical example of this, or Bert Muley, for that matter, who's under whose mayorship we got the sleeping ban in 1978. But when it comes to local issues, and even local environmental issues or local police control issues, they're far from liberal. There's this just incredible distinction, and this is not the case, however, with activists like the man who called in, the V-Man, and other activists who are working hard on those issues. So I think that he misunderstood what I was saying. I could be wrong, but I think that was a misunderstanding there. Secondly, William F. Buckley, Mr. Buckley, who I would like to imitate on occasion, is very good on the drug issue. That's about the only issue, though, that he is any good on. And I do like to point out when a whole bunch of people agree that it should not be a crime for people to use medications or recreational drugs, and yet the government persists in jailing people at an increasing rate, there's something really crazy going on and something really wrong. And I don't mind calling in sources from all over the place. It's not just my issue. I would assume it's also the V-Man's issue and everybody else's issue. The drug war is a major issue. So that's my response to that, and I'd be happy to talk about it at greater length. And I do appreciate people calling in passionately and being critical, because that's what the show is about. And thank you, V-Man, and thank everyone else for listening to this show. And do give me a call off-air at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We can talk more about these issues on the next show, which will be, again, scheduled for Thursday, 6 to 8, for another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. It's 96.3. I'm going to throw on a CD, and I believe we're going to be getting some early action from Old Lady Scararms, and I hope that pleases folks. Let's see what kind of stuff we can find here. It'll keep us all amused until that happens. This should work. Again, thank you for being with me, and come back again.
The pirate ships are sailing out on stormy seas. There's a radio free America just for you and me. The big radio station are stinking up the air. The abuse, let him plot, the real nightmare. Say, hi, I'm a diesel, got on the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. Easy crawling your grave. The coast guards are coming to shut the pirate down. They don't believe in free speech, the FCC's in town. Their axles and their hammers, they smash it all to bits. They want a little battle, but the war's not over yet. Say, I am a diesel, got on the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. FCC crawling your grave. Oh, what are they afraid of? That we might tell the truth. We might play something good, and it wouldn't be a goof. What we need is liberty, not those sticky laws. Freedom from the FCC and their muddy grubbing paws. Say, hi, I'm a diesel, cut on the pirate radio, land of the free and home of the brave. FCC calling your grave. Thank you.
flags are waving, defy the FCC. Lily-livered scallywags full of mendacity. It's 50 of the airways, we're sculling lots of rum. We'll wake them, walk the plank, we're having lots of fun. Sing, I am H.G.'s old, good old fired radio, land of the free and home of the brave. That's DC crawling your grave. I am H.G.'s old, good old fired radio, land of the free and home of the brave. That's DC crawling your grave. Sing, I am H.G.'s old, good old fired radio, land of the free and home of the brave. Crawling your grave. Crawling there, you stinky, slimy slugs. Aye, keyhole log. Make a box of planks. 40 lashes. Gouge their eyes out. Chop their legs off. Aye, gouge your McGillicuddy's my name. Get away from me.
Just a quick note before I leave the studio. There are now copies in the library of the Street Shit Sheet. That's the homeless newsletter that I've published more frequently in the past years, but still occasionally comes out. Its past issues are now available in the reference section for the last 8 or 9 years. If you want to see the bound volumes, go in and take a look. You can see at least my perspective and that of a number of other people who've written for the Street Shit Sheet, which has been was particularly frequent in 1988, 89. Those issues haven't reached the library yet, but the issues that are there are from mid-1990 through the current issues. And it's quite an eye-opener, I think. You get a perspective that you would, well, you're probably used to if you listen to this radio station and if you listen to my show, but it's one that you don't see in the media usually, the written media. Thanks again, and stay tuned for Old Lady Scar Arms after a bit more free radio jamming up the dial, Pirate Classics.